city shines like a million pieces of glass. Made some mistakes, but you just throw your head back and laugh. Cigarette smoke still on my clothes. What do you think about me now?
Hey friends, welcome to the Recovering Artist Podcast, healing and recovery in the performing arts. My name's Dean Anthony, and it's great to have you with us. You know, the gift of recovery is one that grows with giving. Unless you give it away, we won't keep it. By sharing our recovery, our healing, and most important, our struggles with others, we tend to value that recovery even more. For me, only in my first year of recovery, it's been the most powerful and humbling year of my life. I have much to learn and much to discover, but I'm willing. In the months ahead, we'll have guests from all aspects of the performing arts industry discussing addiction, depression, anxiety, PTSD, sexual assault, food disorders, discrimination, and of course, sobriety. We're not professionals here at the Recovering Artist Podcast, and we are not affiliated or connected with any 12-step organization. We will have counselors and specialists joining us from time to time, but mostly, it's a platform for the performing artist community to truly have a voice. This is the reason for this podcast. You can find us on Facebook at the Recovering Artist Podcast for upcoming guests and ways to find us on your favorite listening platform. You can also leave us a review, ask questions, make suggestions, or just reach out. We'd love to hear from you. Lastly, a word of caution. This podcast may contain mature content, difficult subject matter, and strong language. Listener discretion is advised. The Recovering Artist Podcast is on now. Hey everyone, welcome to episode 8 here at the Recovering Artist Podcast. It's just a few days after Easter Sunday, and I hope you all had a lovely weekend. It was quiet around here. An unexpected time for some peace and reflection. Sometimes many of us just don't take the time to do it. My phone didn't ring, not many emails, and honestly, it was bliss. I don't want to say that I'm getting sappy or soft or mushy in my recovery, but I think I'm getting a little softer and a little mushier in my recovery. Spring is here. The birds are chirping. Plants and trees have new life. And the ability to see that now in my recovery is amazing. Plant stuff, to get the dirt in my fingers and feel the earth. It's just amazing to sit and see the gifts. Now, the bear that came to visit me this week was a little unexpected, and the fact that he trashed my bird feeders in my yard was a little more unexpected. But it's his world too, and it's not about me and all my stuff. He rested over winter. He woke up and he was hungry. I get it. So instead of freaking out, I just adjusted. He got what he needed. My dog Snow and I are safe. And he's gone, and he hasn't come back. It's all good. Now, there might be a lesson in this, and I think it starts with balance. Seeing everything instead of just what triggers me. Opening my eyes to the life around me, and really look at it without trying to figure out how I'm going to judge it. Sure, it's a simple step, but for me, simple's a good thing. Now that I'm way off topic, let's get back to today's cast. The episode this week is called Sonatas in Serenity, and my guest is Justin Piper. Jesse, as I call him. He's a solo pianist and a collaborative pianist. He's appeared across the country and abroad, including guest appearances at Carnegie Hall, the Kauffman Center, and even the Discovery Channel. In 2019, he released his first solo album entitled Humoresque with Double V Records. featuring the works of Schumann and Scriabin. Check it out on iTunes, Spotify, or Amazon. Sought after as a vocal coach in New York, Jesse served on the faculty and piano staff for the Cheryl Milnes Voice Experience, the International Vocal Arts Institute, the Manhattan School of Music, and the Manhattan Opera Studio. This summer, he'll be here at the Brevard Music Center on the artistic staff with me. I'm jived to have him here. He's a teacher, an educator, principal organist, and music director at Holy Trinity Episcopal Church in Inwood, New York City. And this is a cool thing. Jesse's in the Library of Congress for his transcription of Mahler's Fourth Symphony. You can find it on imslp.org. And if that's not enough, Jesse's also a conductor and a chorus master, an all-around amazing guy. And he's in recovery. I'm so excited to have him here today. So here we go. I give you Jesse. How you doing, my friend?
Doing well. How are you?
Oh, I'm good. Thanks so much for being here today. What a blast. And I think we have tons and tons to talk about. So I just read a bunch of stuff about you in the intro before this, but you know, decided to call this Sonatas in Serenity. I'm so pithy. And and it's just, you know, because I've had lots of different people from the arts world, but mostly singers, because that's who I deal with. But having you on here as a pianist, I think it's really cool, and this for several reasons. And some of my thoughts were a lot about, and we can talk about this later, but there's an isolation that can happen inside of playing a piano, right? You're sitting in your room, it's very focused, it's different, and singing is a little more exposed and a little more out there, or different forms of performance. So, but so hey, tell me, give us a scoop, you know?
Yeah, well, thanks again for having me on. I mean, it's a pleasure. I think what you're doing is amazing. It's really great. I like the Serenity and Sonata, because
Sonatas and Serenity.
Oh, excuse me. Sonatas and Serenity, right? Well, the Sonata has to go first. No.
It does.
I just got done working on a Beethoven sonata. So, I understand the loneliness.
there you go.
What's very related, there's actually two things that are related. One is, I could say the Serenity Prayer for, my recovery, but also for me playing the sonata. You know, I have to accept the things I cannot change. Right. I have to have the courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.
There you go.
And I feel like that, it's applicable on both ends of the spectrum, especially when I get into the variations movement of the 30th sonata.
We talked about this before, so you are, consider yourself an alcoholic, right?
That is correct.
Yep, just like me. And your sobriety date or time is?
So I walked into a meeting March 2nd, 2019, and that was my first day of continually not to drink.
Right.
And I am on day 764 today.
Wow, that's incredible. And I think it's really fascinating. I didn't mention this before, but I do know you, and we met in New York City. Yeah, we have. Well, yes, we do. And we met in New York City doing a show together, and where you were the repetiteur and I was the stage director, and that was our first meeting. And, you know, it's really part of the reason I wanted to have you on here, too, is just to talk about that. I love that you're in New York City, too, because I'm hearing sirens in the background, and I'm hearing birds in my yard. So it's got the best of both worlds. So I do think it's amazing how we met. And I think we hit it off, and I think that we liked each other, and it was all that pleasantry, easy part. And but I think that where you were in your life when we met was not long after, right?
When we met, it was before I.
That's right.
So we had met before, and we had then re-met after.
Right.
And so if we want to take the sonata The sonata analogy.
Go for it.
We met in the exposition.
Interesting.
Then, and we had our development. and now this is the recapitulation.
Oh, man. Wisdom. Look at that wisdom. to know the difference. How fantastic is that? But I do remember once, months and months later, years later, I think, maybe 2 years later, I reached out to you, not as a guy who was in early recovery, but as a guy who wanted to hire you to come work for me, right?
Which was amazing. It was one of the best calls I had.
Oh,
since all everything had happened. So it was
right. And I while that first conversation was happening, I just fessed up to you because I was in such a raw and neutral and absolutely panicked state. Even processing how I was going to do a season was over my head because I was, I was broken, and you knew that. But when I mentioned it, I didn't mention it for empathy or sympathy. I just wanted to let you know where I was. Mm-hmm. And after I did that, what happened? What did you say to me?
Well, first of all, it was about a year for me.
Mm.
It was around this time, wasn't it?
I think it was.
Oh no, it was about a month ago, a month earlier, wasn't it?
February. I don't even know what day we're in.
Yeah, we're April 4th. I think it was in February or something like
it
that.
It was
late February. So I'd almost gotten a year, and I had got your call, and it made me think of how I felt when I was first telling my my support system, and it made me feel really proud to have someone else be able to say that, because it's an insanely vulnerable thing to go through, and it made me feel invigorated because I'm like, oh, I struggled like that too.
Well, I gotta say that from my vantage point is that I looked at it as immediately when you said to me that you've been sober for a year, it changed my disposition, it changed my moment, and I just said, that's a gift. It was a gift. Mm-hmm. And the gift was, oh my God, there's gonna be a guy here with me in the first summer that I'm running a program sober that is sober and someone that I can talk to, rely on, be with, and as they say in the program, put two drunks together and you got a meeting. So
got a meeting.
And the fact is I was going to get to be with you every day, and so it was really kind of life-changing for me, and I did look at it as a gift, and I think it was godsend, and so I hope you know that. Now, we can talk about that. Well, we can talk about that later, the fact that, COVID took that summer away from us. But I have this summer with you. So, and we're in that recapitulation?
Just a year later.
Right. So we are moving forward in a different tempo. So I'm pretty stoked about that. Yeah. So let's talk a little more about that first time that we met, because I think it's really fascinating. The other day, you and I were having a little pre-conversation, and I was in the throes. When I met you, I was in the throes of my progression, mm-hmm. and it was work and go to the office. Yeah. And I had my office right down the street. It was my office when I used to live there, and It was my home. It was home to me. Mm-hmm. And so we'd work, and I said, all right, let's go. And I would probably, I don't really remember 100%, but I would probably ask you to join us every night. Also, stiff arm you a little bit. Come on, bro. Because I was in that part of my life where I guess, haven't fully analyzed that I just wanted to progress with other people in my alcoholism. Isn't that make sense to you?
Yeah, well, that was something we were talking about, was that it's like almost I could sense, because I was, what you just described is a very similar experience I was going through. I was working probably too much, and then I was partying to compensate.
Right.
And I was using it. It was like a cycle. So that, like, the first thing I think to, you know, to address is that it's interesting how normal that was.
Well, yeah, you know, when you, in retrospect, you look back and go, all right, so you work hard, and then this is my reward. And I've said this on this podcast multiple times. For me, it was always, oh, didn't I do good today? Ah, this didn't, wasn't I efficient? Wasn't I brilliant in the room? Whatever.
I deserve this.
Yes, exactly. I deserve this, and I'm going to get this. And I remember you said to me when we were talking last week or so that you were already in process of, I'm drinking too much. I'm trying to slow down. I'm trying to change my ways. And, you know, this, and I always wondered now, what was it like dealing with somebody like me who would say, come on, bro, let's go. Come on. Let's go to the office. You know, so, what was it like?
That's a great question. So I guess, like, the first thing is, this is, so if you're in the program, this is what you call a dry drunk, or someone that is trying to stop but isn't using the tools that, you know, at their disposal.
And you're so, speaking of yourself right now.
And I'm saying that's essentially what I was.
Gotcha.
I was trying to stop, but didn't know how to and didn't know why, really. So, like, it wasn't necessarily that you were a bad influence. On the contrary, I was looking for people for you, like you. I wanted to be around people like you.
Mm.
I was one, the person, like, I was you. Yeah. You know, like I was doing the same thing, you right. know, to, you know, whenever I was out. So it was more that I think we attracted each other because of, and I think, part of it is, you know, just my personality type as well. You know, I'm a little obsessive. You know, I go hardcore. I'm spending hours in a room by myself working on a passage. You know, that was one of the things I learned, was that you don't get rid of the reward. You have to reward yourself with something that is beneficial.
Yeah, so that's impossible to, for me anyway, and I'm speaking for myself, that was impossible for me to process when I was in the throes of my drinking.
Exactly, me too.
It was just simply impossible. And obviously that first 6 months of not drinking, you know, trying to discover what's going to be the replacement for that, instead of being able to immediately go, boom, I'm good. Yeah, we're good. Life is going to be great. It's all beautiful and roses. And it wasn't. I mean, it was brutal for me. And, you know, the gifts that came were very, very slow. And, you know, and they were not without their bumps. Mm-hmm. But I'm grateful now. You know, I mean, just the simple thing that I say on this cast all the time is the fact that I can make sober decisions 24 hours a day is huge to me.
Yeah,
it's huge.
Yeah, same. And I was talking to another friend of mine who's in recovery, and the other thing that's kind of crazy about it all, though, is, you know, you realize that you don't have that, you know, that thing to fall back on if stuff doesn't go well.
Right.
You know, it was like, I even though I knew, like, I was drinking too much all the time, I always had, like, a reason why stuff wasn't happening in my life.
Right. Well, that's the ownership that we don't always quite. It's a little fuzzy and it's a little gray.
Yeah, it's
areas.
Hard. It's hard to.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it's not just the drinking, but that was, I think, the first step was that, you know, I needed to be able to cope with stuff, and drinking was my coping mechanism,
right.
And it was eventually going to lead me down a path of destruction. Right. Which was, or I needed to walk into that first meeting and, you know, actually do the program and really get through a day-to-day thing and change my habits.
So talking about that, well, habits, yeah, we'll get into that in a sec, but, you know, let's talk about that before that first walk into the meeting, because I know that's big for both of us. And getting past what you said, your own stigmas of alcoholism and what an alcoholic is. That was big for you, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I think, you know, growing up in Wisconsin, it's very normal to have a beer at lunch. Right. Or, you know, if you're going to go, you know, go have lunch, you have it at the bar.
Right.
You know, that's just, I remember, you know, it's just like parties where it was like excessive. And it, not to say that everyone is alcoholics, you know, in a certain place. That'd be a, you know, ridiculous stereotype. But I think what I'm getting at is the culture of it all was that, you know, if you couldn't hold your liquor, there was something wrong with you.
Mm.
Not that you were drinking too much.
Interesting.
Yeah,
and how did you feel the how did you feel about the stigma of what the industry might look at you?
Right. So and then you know, if you had like this problem, this issue, you know, like I had in my head thought that somehow I had failed,
right,
or I had become untrustworthy, or I have somehow, I've shown my cards. No one wants to show that you have this problem that other people don't have.
Well, that, and also just the fact that your fear of what people will then stigmatize you as.
Right.
You know, and so
now because... They've judged, now you're in this category.
Right. And you're weak.
Yeah.
You're weak. Yeah.
I found it similar, like if you've been incarcerated in any way.
Mm.
It's like, you know, on those forms you have, you know, have you been to jail? It's like, oh, he's a criminal. It's like you've already been ostracized or labeled and put into this place without, and it's like now the only way to do it is to like prove yourself.
Man, it just triggered something for me. I got to just drop this in. It wasn't long after I had quit drinking that I needed to check in with a doctor, you know, and I was so bad about doing that ever. You know, if anybody knows me, they know that I just didn't go to the doctor.
Uh-huh.
But I remember sitting there in that seat, filling out that paperwork. And it said, I got to the drinking part. And I looked at it and went, oh, my God. Do you drink alcohol? And I went, no.
Yeah.
And I almost wrote today next to it, you know, because I wanted to write today because that's the way I was thinking. This was only less than a month in. Boy, that's huge.
Yeah.
Oh, man. My brain just started swimming on that. The community just started to think about right. that moment for me.
It's the framing.
So yeah, okay. So you, there's a stigma. We understand the stigma about that. You also had mentioned to me that there was some pressure maybe coming from.
Yeah. So people that loved me were saying like, hey, you should like, you know, do something, you know, it's like this happening, right. Things are happening, like, you know, nudge, nudge, wink, wink. But I think the stigma was not so much that it was imposed on me, it was that I built it up.
Mm.
And so I think leading into that is I had to go in wanting and knowing that I needed this, not because someone told me or was a court order or there was like, you know, I was going to break up with someone. It was either I had to know that I needed this.
Well, yeah, you had to get to the point where you were admitting your powerlessness.
Right. And yeah. And that's leading into the program. Exactly.
Right.
I didn't know that at the time.
So to backtrack on something you just said, Jesse, I vividly remember going back into my thinking of, you know, before I quit drinking or whatever. And you were talking about having people around you that were willing to talk to you and share and say, hey, bro, you have a problem. What's going on here? Mm-hmm. I don't think I had that.
Wow.
I mean, and a big part of it, sadly, was, I think, that people were scared to say something to me because I had this somewhat sense of a power position, and no one wanted to cross that line.
Right.
You know, I would bring it up to a couple of close friends of mine here and there, but I think they'd tap dance because they didn't want to drop that huge ball on me. So,
you know what? I just wanted to share something of my own thought on that. Is you
please
know, that whenever they any person did talk to me, it was a challenge, right? It was like I felt like my, you know, my cortisol levels shooting up.
Your defensiveness.
You know, I was, you know, I'm getting ready to fight. You right. That kind of feeling. Like it wasn't like, oh, thank you so much for caring for me. It was, oh, really? You're gonna say that? And you have these problems? Like that's
yeah.
That's
but who I'm would? Going. I mean, who would, bro? Come on. I mean, it's that's a huge issue.
And then to I think that's really interesting that you said that because I think that's also not really. Considered as well is that, you know, what people are afraid to say something because like that might be challenging.
That. Sure, but do you not think now, in you know, in our moment of sobriety and recovery, that there's a different grace about us? I believe, at least yes. I try for it every day. That the acceptance of anything like that today would be taken with so much more compassion.
And actually, I would welcome it now.
Yes. How fascinating is that? That's a gift of sobriety right there.
Yeah.
But also that stems outside of just alcohol. That stems outside into the emotional sobriety world where, you know, you're being an asshole. Oh, okay. And, you know, and then somebody says that you might want to rethink the way you're doing that. Oh, okay. Absolutely. You can take that pause. Yeah. You know, I'm a broken record on this cast. I say that same thing all the time. My mantra is poison balance, you know, mm-hmm. which I didn't understand before. So that's powerful. That's yeah. huge, man. So what was it like for you to walk into that first meeting?
Well, I was hungover.
Ah, interesting.
So I was not feeling great. It was at the 96th Street and Broadway. There's like a little church that you go down in New York City.
Always in the basement.
Yep, in the basement. You know, like you don't really know if like this is the right place.
Sure.
The first time you walk in, and then all of a sudden you walk in, and people are like, "Oh, come on in, come on in." So the first time, you know, very welcoming. I was immediately struck by the fact that it didn't matter who you were or what you look like. It sounds very cliche, but it was just a bunch of alcoholics in a room.
Right.
And that stuck with me. That's seared into my brain is that it didn't matter what, you know, suit and tie or, you know,
right.
you know, you haven't washed your clothes in a while. Everyone has a chance to speak. Everyone's listening and everyone's trying to get better.
You know, I think that's a fascinating topic to discuss because we know that there have been many people who have taken that first step to walk into a meeting. And have turned right around and walked right straight back out for whatever reason, for their inability to accept their powerlessness, but just the vibe of the room and what you're surrounded by and where you are at that moment. You know, I mean, I walked into my first meeting and I was already broken. I mean, it, you know, just in the 12 hours before I poured my last beer out and then waited till noon the next day. It was 24 hours and I was scared to death. And I happened to go to a meeting that is full of old timers, you know? So I was one of the youngest people there and I'm in my mid to late 50s and, you know, and just a room that's full of sobriety. I couldn't process any of that the second I walked in, but thank God I stayed, you know, thank God I stayed, but I knew that I had to stay. You know, this is where I was in my head. So keep going. Tell me.
Yeah. Well, that it, that I mean, that rings true in my experience as well. I remember after the meeting, and this older gentleman came up and said, "Hey, you." I said, I go, "Yes?" You know, and he goes, "What's your number?"
Nice.
You know, mark my name down, call me tomorrow morning.
Great.
And it was for people that are not from New York City, for someone to like just approach you and you know, the first thing you're like, "What do you want from me?"
Right.
You know, or what kind of scam is going on? I'm not going to sell my Metro card for $3. Sorry. But to like see like a genuine like connection and someone that cared without even asking why or like what's in it for him.
Right.
That was very powerful. So I ended up calling the stranger every day for 90 days.
Amazing.
You know, this is the sponsor thing. And that was another thing that really blew me away, the whole Alcoholics Anonymous, is that there you have this love of people trying to get better and working on this thing together. But it has nothing to do with you know, how many donations you made.
Right.
Or what position you're in. Or who your family is.
But, yeah, but that goes into the whole aspect of service. And
exactly.
And it's service. And, you know,
it's one, above the person. One single person. It's and
you got to give it back, my friend. You know?
Right.
And that's what we're doing now, just sitting here talking about this. It's about giving it back, and the fact that if we just try to hold on to our own personal recovery, we're going to end up being dry. We're going to end up just going out, you know. So you need that. It is hard to comprehend that the second you walk in. And I had the same thing. There was a gentleman who, you know, I pretty much just was, it was that first meeting for me, and they shifted the meeting. Mm-hmm. For me, I didn't understand any of it, and I heard stories, and I heard, and some I could just went in one ear and out the other because I couldn't even speak barely. And but there was a specific person who spoke to me and was actually sitting behind me. And Jesse, this story just almost brings me to tears. And I turned around and I looked in his eyes, and I stared at him, and he spoke. And he spoke right to my soul. And I went, "Okay, this is not normal. this shouldn't be happening." And was not expected to happen. But, you know, at the end of the meeting, took my number, started to call me. We're going, you know. And then he talked me through detox for the next 4 or 5 days before, you know, actually took me to the hospital because I needed some fluids and my body was just shutting down. And right. And this person has just turned out to be one of the most important people in my life.
Yeah.
So sort of ramble on.
I don't know any other, that's I think just an interesting thing to talk about is I don't know any other thing that you could just walk in and someone would do that for someone else.
But that's the beauty of you know, getting out of self, and you know, which is just, it's the beauty of it that we can't figure out right away. It takes time.
Yeah,
but
that's really amazing, though.
90% of it is just, you know, and I say every day, Jesse, I get on my knees and I say, "Relieve me from the bondage of self, ego, and judgment," every day. So if I can live by that to start my day,
yeah,
I'm in a better place. No, I'm not going to be perfect, you know. So remind me of that quote that you said a friend of yours said.
Right. So I a friend of mine had that I heard. So like this kind of relates to when I was trying to stop but didn't know how. Mm. It was that. "However long and hard I build, alcohol will always tear it down."
Hmm.
And that stuck with me because I have this, you know, I Am Sober app, Right. And I've been, you know, I have 767, you know, 7 days or whatever, 764.
Incredible.
But, you know, I look back on it, and 3 years ago, I have 4 days, 2 days, one day, 7 days, 6 days. You know, right. And that was because I alcohol was tore it down, and I'd always be like, why am I back in this place? And so I think the moral of the story is that another saying that I think is just as important is one day at a time.
Yeah, it's the only really way to do it, you know, because and again, you're talking about new habits and all those other elements. I do want to throw in a quote that I heard on a meeting today.
Great.
We were talking about instincts and about our natural instincts as human beings, which we're given the gift of instincts, or we wouldn't be able to survive. And, you know, a guy said something on the meeting today. He said, well, you know, my inns stink. And I went, what? And my head went, are you kidding me? How perfect is that? My inns stink. Okay. But I'm doing my best to shift my habits to make my instincts better. And that's so, so huge. And just being able to change those habits in early sobriety were crucial for you as well.
Oh, yeah. And I think that's where being a musician and an artist gave us perspective, or at least me, because I knew it's not just going to be a couple weeks.
Yeah. Oh, so you're tackling it like it's the a musical passage on a piano. It's going to take me how many days to get this thing? That's interesting. I never thought about it that way. You know, man.
How many hours do you have to do Ness and Dorma, you know, before you can just open
out? Oh, man, that reminds me. I did an opera called The Lighthouse by Peter Maxwell Davies years ago. And Peter Maxwell Davies, it was the hardest thing I've ever sung in my life.
Yeah.
And you just triggered a whole new thought for me, because I seriously would sit down. It took me 6 months to learn the damn thing. It was so hard. And all I did was I'm going to look at one page today. You know, and obviously it's got 15, 20 meters per page.
Right.
And it was hard. And so, okay, all I'm going to do is I'm going to shed this down. I'm going to strip this down, and I'm going to build it from scratch, which wasn't my way of doing things in the past. Mm-hmm. You know, I could learn something pretty quickly. I wasn't a genius musician, but yeah, I can read a note value, and I can do all that stuff. And
right.
But I had to go through this beat by beat. And, you know, my score was a disaster because it was marking beats 1, 2, 8, 15, 32. You know, and I did. I just spent one day on one page, and I shut the book and put it down. It's no different than my sobriety, because I would wake up and I would get that literature out, and I would start a routine and get that routine to build me back to a place where I could function.
Right. And you had to have the perspective of knowing that you can't freak out that you don't have it all tomorrow. Figure it out by tomorrow.
Right. Right. Well, I mean, look, I mean, I don't have squat figured out, but that's the beauty of, you know, that's the beauty of the program, is that nobody else gets in there and says, well, I've never heard once, I got this. You know, right. that verbiage just doesn't come up.
Right. That's,
you know, it's a process. And, you know, so, you know, I could almost look at it and say, well, today I'm going to get at this. Does that make sense? Instead of, I got this, today I'm going to get at this. Meaning I'm going to do what I need to do for that moment, for that day. And
get a couple more measures.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And sometimes they're, you know, 18 30 second bars, you know,
maybe sometimes you gotta repeat it.
Oh great, yes, exactly. But then sometimes there's a nice 4-4 bar, you know, right. What I mean. And so I can, that's easy, so you get a couple of easy moments. Oh my gosh, Sonatas and Serenity, bro.
Here we go.
Totally hit it. That's amazing. So let's talk about not being able to do it alone. You know, because I think that, you know, what we're doing right here is, and I'm going to preface this by saying we met just for a Zoom, you know, I don't know, a week ago. And we started just talking about this and talking about what we're doing. And it was an hour in 5 minutes. You know what I mean? It felt like 5 minutes, but it was an hour because we can keep talking about this. This is, you know, and it's not that we're on some kind of high horse, yay, you know, recovery.
Right.
But it's the ability to be grateful. And I didn't get that at first. I hear see people say, you know, I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic. I mean, what the hell's grateful about that? Mm. I get it more today, you know, because I am grateful today, you know, and I walk outside and, you know, the sun is shining and I can take this in such a new way. But tell me, you know, talk to me about what it was like for you and the people that you had, other people.
Yeah, so I had, you know, I had a brother that helped me a lot.
Same here.
He was there for me, and he had some experience with it. So he was that was, I mean, my family was there for me, but I especially one of my brothers was there. I had a close friend that also went through the program.
Great.
So having two people that were not just supportive but understood the process really, I think, to help lay the foundation for my own path. And then like you had mentioned, you know, I went into my first, second, third meeting and the people there were saying things that I didn't understand. So
sure.
Some of them, you know, I remember several conversations throughout the first couple of weeks where, you know, you're the reason why I'm here. And I'm like, what do you mean? I have 4 days. You know what I mean? Like, what are you talking about, man? And now I see that. And so, like, for instance, when you called me, it was like the first time I was like, now I know why people were saying that to me. You know, hearing someone else struggling, I mean, like, I went through that. And, like, I just want you to know that you'll get through it.
Exactly. But you also then want to help.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
right. You want to share your story with them and just be a vessel. You know,
right.
And so my sponsor says to me all the time, he said, I'm just a vessel. You know, I don't have some kind of documentation of what I'm going to say. I tell you my story. It's going to be different than yours, but there's going to be something that's going to, you're going to latch on to.
Mm-hmm.
But that is an amazing thing. You're absolutely right. You know, how am I ever going to be able to help anybody? Well, I vividly remember feeling that.
Mm-hmm. Same.
But look, you know, we're sitting here now. Hopefully somebody listens and they know it's okay.
Right. I mean, that's something I like to do is to me, when the people that helped me, it wasn't like a huge moving of a mountain. It was that, hey, you want to go to a meeting together? Hey, you want to talk about it? Hey, you want to just, you know, I was at I remember second weekend, there was a party. And everyone was drinking, and I was not, obviously, and I was having a tough time. And I had my good friend come up to me and say, hey, I won't drink if you're not drinking. And it's like those kind of things help me just as much. I mean, not to diminish my sponsor and, you know, these you know, friends that were there every minute, but that also was just as huge. And it inspired me to think that, you know, in everyday life, we don't have to just move mountains to impact people in a positive way. You could just give them compassion, like you were saying. And who knows if that's the moment where they could, you know, it helped me.
Of course. But, you know, I have people outside the program that were staunch in the kindness and willingness to listen and to just let me, God, ramble. I mean, I would, you know, thank God people weren't recording those conversations. And I don't think I need to make amends to anybody. But the fact that I was able to just vent and process and, you know, and it all comes around because then, you know, I had a guy on here several weeks ago who's a very good friend of mine, a lighting designer, and he was on the phone with me almost daily.
Yeah.
Daily. I got about four friends that were right there for me, and they're not in the program. And they just listened, and they shared their perspective of in the moment and hearing me verbalize what I'm trying to process, which was the program, and the reasons why. Instead of someone who was in the program. Now, I did do that. I did what I was told. I did what I was told, right? Mm-hmm, and that's mm-hmm. the other thing, is that getting that humility to say, all right, you have XYZ amount of sobriety to someone in the program. I'm going to shut up. Yep. And take the cotton out of my ears and put it in my mouth, and I'm going to listen. And I still have that sense. I get onto a meeting where I sit with people who have lots of sobriety. There's a humility and a gratitude that I just overflows. Mm-hmm. And they're still there.
Yeah.
And they're there because they need to be there and they want to be there. You know, it's not just about, oh, I can't wait for someone new to get in here so I can be of service.
Right.
It's so that they have, there's a depth to them that is crucial to sit in these rooms. And it's powerful, man. It's powerful.
Yeah.
Wow. So tell me something else. You've got new habits. You know, I have to go back and say, I do have to say what I think is really cool, and I put you in that category, Jesse. You know, I do. I say to you, thank you for your friendship, and
right back.
I think there's a different connection. I think there's a stronger connection in our potential friendship based on where we're both at. Because all I have to do is see your name or hear your name or see your face, and I get it. You could use a haircut, but that's another story. I know. You got that curly hair. I love it. And you know, it is important, and I hope you know that I value your sobriety. I value your friendship and your words. And our paths are different. Yep.
Yeah.
There's no question.
Yeah, well, thanks. I value yours as well. And I think what's really cool about this experience is that we now will have worked middle, so before recovery, during it, and now, you know, kind of on the other side in some ways.
No, I do. I look forward to that. What is that? The recapitulation, right?
Yeah, right. In God, July. So
I did have music theory back in the day, but thanks for reminding me. Yeah, I mean, I'm stoked that, you know, and jived that you get to come here to the summer, and we're going to work together and be around, and you can come sit on my porch in the woods, and I can make a fire, and we can sit there and not drink.
Right. And, well, yeah, I think that's one of the great gifts of recovery, is that you essentially have unlimited options. There's so much more. So we're talking a lot about struggles, which there are a lot.
Sure.
And you're very keenly aware of it, especially when you don't have a scapegoat like alcohol to, you know, push the real issues aside.
Right.
But at the same time, like you said, I wake up every morning and I'm not stuck in the past.
Hmm.
I'm not stuck in my regret anymore, and if I can show anyone else that gift, that's it right there, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean there is a sense of, I don't know if I should, how to even say this, or if this is the wrong thing to say, you know, there's an accountability that I feel that is just different for my life. And it's not that, oh, I've got to stay sober to prove to everybody else that I have, and I'm not a quitter, and I'm a winner. It's not about that. You know, it's just not about that. And, you know, going back to having you here, you know, or having people, more people around me after this quarantine, I already know that I'm going to have to tread lightly on that.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I'm going to have to tread very lightly and not just say, boom, we're right back to where I was socially without the alcohol, because I know that's going to trigger scenarios for me.
Right.
You know, so there'll be times when I just go, you know what, Dean? Go home. Sit in your quiet. Process. Be with your dog. You know, so it's going to be fascinating. And you might go, hey, can I come sit over and talk in the porch tonight? Hey, are you good? I said, is everything okay? Yeah, I'm fine. Everything's good. I said, let's do it tomorrow night. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But if you said, man, I'm struggling. I need it. I said, come on, bro. Let's go. And you're there without even hesitating. That whole feeling of being open and honest and it's new. I mean, I'll help anybody in, you know, I've always been a giving soul, but there's always been some kind of hidden agenda in it. You know, oh, look at me. Aren't I Mr. Take Care of Everybody?
Right.
You know, trying to break that cycle is huge. But I have to be smart. I have to be smart.
And part of it is unconscious. And it's like becoming conscious of that. Oh, 100%. And I think like also what's interesting about what you just said is that crosses the threshold of not just alcoholics, but just people in general. I mean, it gave me perspective that everyone has their battle.
Sure.
Everyone is going through their thing. And, you know, if someone, you know, is going through a tough time, I shouldn't just assume that they're just a screw up. You know, or whatever. Like, it's given me perspective of that, you know, so many people were patient with me.
Oh, my gosh.
So many people were, you know,
I agree.
Allowed me to get away. You know, it gave me such perspective of that. I don't need to jump to a conclusion so quickly because you never know what that person's going through.
You know, I say this on this cast a lot, is that if I look at every problem that comes a part of my life or any kind of argument or disagreement, I had some role in it. I know I had a role in it, you know, and that is where I sit. I sit in that scenario. So I'm making the decision not to go into that. If I start to think it, yeah, I got to walk away and I have to process, why are you doing that? Mm-hmm. What's going to happen of this? You know, is this really... And look, I talk to myself all the time. I don't know if you're one of those, but my dog doesn't care. And I do. I talk to myself. I, you know, I have conversations, and they're often out loud, you know, about scenarios. And I used to be really, really, really bad with that. I would have a predestiny about there's going to be an argument, and I'm going to have a conversation with myself about how I'm going to argue it,
have the edge.
Yes, and I would just think about it through my head, and what's ironic is that it would usually come true, and I usually said the wrong thing because I, you know what I mean, because I just was already so jacked when I walked in the door, jacked up and ready to combat. And
you know, that's you say that, and it's like that. That's so, you know, not going down that path is the exact same feeling of that, you know, lifting of the shoulders.
Sure.
That you know, it's like you never even had to go down that path. It's like, oh, like that was the same thing. It, you know, they gave me perspective of that. My brain just went down these paths, and you know, I was going into these. These mindsets that were just, you know, just like the alcoholic in me, you know, just destructive. And you kind of let that go and you have a little humility, you know, hey, oh, maybe I was actually part of this problem. You know, was it just the you know, this idiot, you know, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, I'm not super stressed out anymore.
that's an amazing feeling when you're just kind of sitting there and you're going, oh, everything's fine. Okay, we're good.
Weird.
Whoa. You know, but again, it goes back to this, which I didn't even know this conversation was going to start about, you know, the new habits and practicing that recapitulation or whatever you're doing. Mm-hmm. And this is what we're doing here. We're practicing those passages.
It's one day at a time.
Exactly. And we're taking them, and obviously the more cleanliness we get out of it, the cleaner it is, the more emotional joy we get from it, because you know you play it and it goes well, oh, you have this great sigh of cool, that's it,
Right. And, you know, take that analogy even further from like your opera that you were working on. You know, eventually you get past the micro stage.
Right.
And you're all of a sudden now seeing it in a new light, seeing it in the bigger picture.
Now, the difference between a singer and a pianist, I'm going to say, is if I'm singing that Peter Maxwell Davies piece and I screw something up, chances are you're not going to know it. Does that make sense? So that's the plus for me. But if you're playing a Beethoven sonata and you eat it,
oh yeah, yeah,
everybody's going to know.
Especially on YouTube, they'll let you know.
Oh, man, that's incredible. But if I do it with panache and grace and I don't beat myself up or blame somebody else, eh, it's a moment.
Yeah.
You know, it's the beauty of live theater, too. You know, in live theater, if it happens, it happens. Yeah.
You know, yeah, it's, and it, I don't know why this made me think of this, but we were talking about how alcohol was a reward for us. But I think, like, another thing that we could, you know, just kind of touch on is that the it's not like you got rid of rewards. It's that the reward is different. And I think that was another thing that I learned too, is that I thought that my reward for doing, you know, working hard was drinking or going, you know, going all out. But now my reward is, it could still be a chocolate or it still could be like binging a, right, you know, Netflix, you know, yeah, but it's about like the, you know, I just understood that for me, alcohol wasn't something I could just, you know, have a, you know, watch an episode.
Right.
You know,
you're going to binge watch it, right? Same for me. But when you, but again, when you, I'm going to sound like a broken record again, but when you said that, you know, the reward from my brain is the ability to see a gift.
Right.
And a part of that gift, which is just something I never would have processed ever before because I was just so stubborn and pigheaded, is that there's a power greater than me is a part of that gift. And yeah, if I lose sight of that, for me, I'll be in big trouble, you know, because right, then it goes right back into self. And then there goes my ego. And it's inflated and that's a problem. So I really do and look forward to this summer.
Yeah, it's going
to
be great
to get back and to be in the room with, you know, young, hungry minds, you know, being that educator that both of us are in our own ways and creating something and coming at it from a sober place.
Yeah.
And not about, look at me, I'm running a program. It's, you know, look at me, how grateful am I to be in this moment?
Right.
You know, that's what I'm striving to do.
The gift is, doesn't necessarily have to be tangible, but it's worth a lot.
Right.
Yeah. That's great. Yeah, I can't wait too.
Yeah. Well, look, my friend, this is such a joy to sit with you, and I certainly look forward to our time on the shack porch here this summer. And it's a beautiful place. And New York City is an old home for me. Spent a few years there. And it's a great place, but I'm happy to be in the woods. So,
yeah.
But and I hope, and I know you've been here before, back when you were younger. So,
you know, yeah, it'll be nice to come back. You know, I'd like some of those birds, maybe. I'll trade you.
Well, you know, I had a bear visit me this week, which was pretty rough. You know, so.
Oh.
But yeah, a couple nights we had a bear coming out of hibernation, which that was new.
Oh, that's.
Yeah, but that's a part of quarantine that I've learned, because I'm never in one place long enough to see or get anything.
Ah, right.
And I even got a picture of it.
Nice.
So, Mr. Bear. So, all right, Jesse, thanks so much for being with us today. And you know, your words are gold, and we're happy to listen to it. And I know that it's going to help somebody, help me for sure. And I appreciate you.
Well, thank you so much, Dean. I really, really happy to be here, and you helped me too. So.
Oh, great, my brother. Thanks for taking the time today.
Of course.
All right, Jess. See you, brother.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us here at the Recovering Artist Podcast. We'd love for you to keep listening down the road. A special thanks to my amazing nephew, Tyler Anthony, for our theme song, What Do You Think? Written by Tyler of the band Sirius Bright. You can find it and other Sirius Bright tunes wherever you listen to music. Thanks to my producer and friend, Matt Hoss Queen, for his tireless efforts to keep me on point. I appreciate you, my brother. And to you, the listeners. Without you, it would just be the community in my head, truly talking nonstop. Don't forget to drop us a note at our Facebook page, The Recovering Artist Podcast. We'd love to hear from you. See you soon, my friends, and remember, let go of the puzzles you can't solve. Only step by step, stage by stage, can you travel the road to greater knowledge and understanding. Have a great day.
Scream out, but I don't make a sound. What do you think? What do you think? What do you think about me now? Fighting your wars, even when you are gone. What the hell have we done wrong? We're still here, fighting your wars, even when you are gone. What the hell have we done wrong? We're still here fighting your war, even when you are gone. What the hell have we done wrong? We're still in your war, even when you are gone. What the hell have we done wrong? About